Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, for years, there was nothing more overhyped and more overrated than NFL schedule release day. Everyone already knows which teams are playing each other this season. So everybody acting like NFL schedule release day being an actual thing was like actually the worst thing. In other words, stop trying to make this into something that it's not. Something, you know, that really matters a lot. But that did not stop fools from doing just that, starting the second it dropped, when they would sit down and start to circle all the really important matchups. You know the ones I'm talking about. For instance, Washington at Minnesota in week 8. Hell yes, baby. That's what I'm saying. Because that right there is a blood feud. That is your sick, sick CKRG right there. CKRG, Case Keenum revenge game. But I'm telling you this, when you look deeper, deeper than just the revenge game, the really tricky thing about that game is that it's a Thursday night and will only be a few days removed from Baltimore at Seattle, the Earl Thomas revenge game. Two revenge games in such a short window. I mean, damn, my head is going to explode. How you gonna do me like that, NFL schedule maker dude? Thing is, there's a hell of a lot more where that came from. You like that? You like that?
You like that?
You like that? You like revenge games? You like revenge matchups? Great. Yeah, tell me how Buffalo at Dallas on Thanksgiving Day tastes. Holy crap, they went there too. That's a thing. That's a Super Bowl 27, Super Bowl 28 revenge game. A revenge game twofer. That's two for revenge.
It's two for me.
Hey, to hell with winning the day.
It's two for me.
To hell with winning the day. And one game at a time. How the hell is anybody associated with the Bills and the Cowboys going to be able to focus on anything other than that epic revenge tilt? Yeah, like you can't tell me that the Bills roster, made up almost entirely of people who started playing football after those games were actually played, will not be fired up for that. Because revenge is a dish best served cold. And on Thanksgiving Day, and the Bills will be looking to give the Cowboys extra dollops of revenge. Damn, all these revenge games. How about week 16? Week 16 on CBS, Jets at Steelers, a Le'Veon Bell revenge game. That one actually might matter, because that's a revenge game where the amount of venom and pettiness between the Bells, or between Bell and the Steelers, is actually legit. But overall, what I'm getting at is declaring revenge games might be the corniest thing ever. Manufacturing contrived hate is always whack. But you know what's even worse? Trying to predict wins and losses. That's like the dumbest thing ever. It's April. The season starts in 5 months. The draft is next week. It's a violent game. Bells are going to get rung. Knees are going to get snapped. Legs are going to get broken. We know this about the NFL. It's violent. Rosters and starting units are going to be completely different in a few months. But you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me that the Texans are going to beat the Colts in Indianapolis in week 7. And even worse than that is when people start to tell you why that's going to happen. You know, like, well, here, the schedule dropped, and I'm looking at it, and the Texans are going to be coming off a tough game the week before at Kansas City. Then they go on the road to Indy before they come home to face Oakland, and then they've got to go all the way to London to play Jacksonville. So they really have to have that game that week against the Colts. Oh, all right. Okay, so now you're all Tony Romo. Now you can see things before they actually happen. Yeah, well, I don't play that game. I'm not interested in hearing the breakdown of travel schedules either. Yes, Oakland's got a lot of early games on the East Coast. Great. And they've got several months to get ready for that. So let me bottom line this entire deal for you. Let me cut to the chase. Let me cut through all the bullcrap. Let me tell you what matters about these schedules. looking at the schedules, there are only two things that matter. Just two. Number one, the Patriots have a really easy schedule. Because every schedule for the Patriots is an easy schedule when you have Tom Brady and you have Bill Belichick and you play in the AFC East. Second point, and only 2 points matter. Second point being, the Cleveland Browns have 4 primetime games. And if you ask me, that's not 4 too many. That is 12 too few. 4? Only 4. Nah, send that thing back. Get it right. Come see me when you've got a schedule with the Browns in primetime every single week, all the way up to the Super Bowl. Now, if this had been just another regular NFL schedule release day, those are the only two things that would have mattered that we should have talked about. But luckily, this was different. This year was different because now the teams are in on the joke. And more importantly, the team's social media departments are in on the joke. And they were doing work, like the Browns. The Browns dropping this video of old school John Dorsey getting the team's schedule and then printing it off on an even older school printer. You think that's a low budget video?
You've got mail.
Wrong. You have any idea how much it costs to buy one of those printers these days? So they got this thing started, but they weren't the only ones who got nice. The Chargers released a video made entirely of stock footage, which you have to see to believe. It's awesome. The Baltimore Ravens went monster truck rally announcer with their release video.
Football fans, this fall, prepare to get annihilated as John Harbaugh and his pet Ravens rise and conquer proudly present the Baltimore Ravens 2019 football schedule, featuring your favorite players against your least favorite teams. Your Ravens start their engines, climbing and crushing a mountain of challengers. The first team to enter the bank gets a free crab and all the Ravens flock in their face. And don't miss the 51st and 52nd rounds of the Smash Mouth Showdown. Plus, your Ravens welcome the defending champs with open arms. Plus, your Ravens go full
bro!
And head west to face these guys. Plus, from the 19th century comes
Poe,
the quarter-story tall
Blackbird.
Worms fear him. Kids love him. But he'll haunt your dreams forever. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Thursday, Sunday, 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 Sunday. Seats are available now. You pay for the whole thing, but you only need the edge.
Not bad. Not bad for the Ravens. Not bad. And as you'd expect, the Colts stripped it down. The Colts went simple. And there are a few things more simple than Andrew Luck sitting on a mini stepladder and reading out the schedule along with a few tourist facts about each city.
This is the 2019 Indianapolis Colts schedule. Week one at Los Angeles Chargers. Did you know the famous Hollywood sign originally read Hollywood Land and was a real estate development advertisement? Week two, at Tennessee. Nashville was the first city in the country to be granted an FM broadcasting license. Week three, home.
Andrew! I know that one! A-N-D-R! Thanks for playing along. Colts doing it. The Cowboys then jump in. They jump in with Jerry Jones and Amari Cooper. Jera whispering sweet nothings into Amari's ear.
I'm Jerry Jones, and this is the Dallas Cowboys 2019 schedule release.
The New York Giants. The Washington Redskins.
Damn, Jerry. That's creepy. Even creepier than you normally are. Now you're creeping on one of your own players. We're supposed to be hyped for the start of the season, not looking to take out restraining orders. And you knew somebody was going to go with a Game of Thrones video, because nobody can do anything right now without referencing Game of Thrones. And this time that somebody was the Atlanta Falcons, and they nailed it, right down to that tiny detail of an animated ram running into a saint outside the Falcons stadium. I mean, straight genius. But as genius as all of those were, They were all tied for second behind the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers have one of the best social media games around, but they took it to a new level yesterday with a scheduled release video dedicated to old school video games. Now, it's visually heavy, but the sounds are so iconic. I'm going to still play it because even if you're driving, you're going to recognize some of the great soundtracks that will bring you all the way back. Roll it. This is why you're all looking up at Carolina. Listen, I understand. It can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or you're running late, to find yourself stuck at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and that train is not even there yet, you might even feel a bit tempted to try to sneak across the tracks. That is a terrible idea. Don't do that, ever. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can still take a train over a mile to stop. You probably didn't know that. And by that time, what used to be your car is now just a crushed hunk of metal. And what used to be you, well, we don't even want to think about that. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train is going to arrive. The train can't stop, even if it does see you. And the result is a disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way, and you need to remember only one thing. Stop. Trains can't. You need to stop. Lincoln Riley is my guest. Lincoln, so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me back on.
Great to have you back on. So you had your spring game last Friday night. Let me start right there. You've got the draft coming up next Thursday. How are things for you and around the program right now?
Just a ton of momentum, you know, just I think off the last several seasons, the success that this program has been able to have, and then I think also just a really, you know, an excitement that the best is yet to come. I think everybody within these walls feel that right now, and so that's it's just a great time. It really is. A lot of excitement around our new team here and the opportunities that they have in front of them and in front of us. And so, it's a beautiful time to be an Oklahoma Sooner.
Lincoln Riley joining us. I'll talk about that new team in 1 second. Let me get your thoughts on Kyler Murray. He's faced a lot of scrutiny ever since he announced his intent to play in the NFL. Lincoln, as somebody who's his coach and somebody who cares about him, what do you make of that scrutiny and how he's handled it?
It's part of the process. You know, we went through a lot of this with Baker and several of the other guys that we've had and, you know, in similar positions that have been high-profile guys and high draft picks and great players and all of that. And so it's part of what you got to handle. You know, and Kyler's, you know, grown up around scrutiny. He's been used to it. He's been in the public eye for a very long time. He was in it at a very, very young age. And so he handles it well. I mean, he doesn't let it affect him. He's a very focused, very mature guy, and I know he's excited about this week, as he should. I mean, what a tremendous accomplishment. Athletically, really just sit back and think about this. A guy that could go in the first round and most likely the top 10 of two major league drafts, two professional drafts. I mean, it's remarkable, and so he's earned it. He's got a great family behind him supporting him, and I'm really, really excited here for next Thursday.
Lincoln Riley is the head football coach at Oklahoma. You know, the thinking had been that he had been drafted by the A's last summer. He was going to play a year of football, then go play pro baseball. If we go back to this time last year, Murray was looking to replace Baker Mayfield. At this time last year, I know you saw potential in him, but did you know how good he could be?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to quantify a little bit. I knew he could be really good. I mean, there's, you know, just, you know, within the program, people that had seen him work the previous years had seen his skill set. There was no question he could be really good. Now, you know, it's still got to translate, and you still got to go out there and do it, which he did. But I felt like the whole time that he could play in the NFL. Now, was he going to get an opportunity that could match what he had baseball wise. Was he, you know, was that deep down what he wanted to do? I mean, those were things I think that he was still working through himself, and things that none of us knew. But yeah, it's kind of awesome to see how it's all unfolded. And again, I'm happy the guys, more than anything, throughout this whole process, wherever he gets drafted, whatever happens, like he deep down is just all in on football. He wants to be an NFL quarterback, and he's done with everything else. And so it's to see him get that opportunity is pretty cool.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Lincoln Riley, my guest, because some NFL teams don't love it if a guy's got a potential backup plan. So what would you say to a team that might wonder if Kyler is all in on football?
I mean, the guy gave up. What the guy gave up, and I know it's been reported and it's not accurate, but what the guy gave up to play, to just enter the draft and to push baseball out of his life forever is remarkable. Most people wouldn't have done it. Most people wouldn't even have considered it, and he did it. And he put it all on the line for football. I mean, even just by playing this year. I mean, the guy risked everything. But to him, it wasn't that. To him, it's I'm getting the chance to play the sport that I love and I'm the most passionate about. And that's where this thing lies. The kid is all in on football. His baseball days are over. He's going to be an NFL quarterback, and he's going to be a damn good one.
Lincoln Riley, my guest. All right, so it'd be one thing if you only had Murray in the draft, but you don't. Let me ask you about wide receiver Marquise Brown. He's coming off a foot injury, but is still expected to go early. What is the team getting when they draft Marquise Brown?
You're getting a game changer. I mean, you're getting a guy, his speed, his skill set, that absolutely changes the game. He changes how people can defend you, gives you so many opportunities as an offensive coordinator to build so many things around his speed. So he's a special player. There's no question. His best ball's ahead of him. So you're getting a great person, a dynamic player, and a guy that, you know, is rapidly improving.
Now you also have Cody Ford. He's got a ton of versatility on the offensive line. And I know that you and Cody had a conversation before he entered the draft, and you knew, Lincoln, that if you advised him to stay, he would have stayed. So how did you go about handling that particular conversation?
Just by being honest. I mean, guys like Cody, I mean, they've earned that. I mean, they've earned the way he worked, the way he handled everything in this program. He's absolutely earned the right to do what he wants to do. And you know, we always just try to give our guys an honest opinion. And for him, you know, having a chance to go be a first-round pick, I mean, unless the guy just absolutely doesn't want to do it, man, I'll pack their bags for him. I mean, this was a life-changing opportunity for him, for his family. And I'm proud of him, man. Those are fun conversations to have in this office. I promise you that.
We're talking to Lincoln Riley. So obviously, I mean, you've got all these great things that are happening coming up, but you can't do a victory lap right now because you got to get ready for the next season. What do you make of what you've seen from your team in spring practices?
Yeah, excited about them. You know, it's definitely a different vibe around here. I mean, new defensive staff, a lot of new players, you know, a lot of new players, especially offensively, you know, at the offensive line position, the quarterback position, some really new, young, exciting players that we've recruited that are, you know, going to be a big part of the future of Oklahoma football. So, yeah, it's fun. I mean, the team feels like it's kind of on a mission, like they're kind of out to prove themselves. You know, there's been so many big names and so many great victories here over the last few years that this team's eager to, I think, live up to the Oklahoma standard, but also, you know, make their own name, and they've got some pretty big goals.
Got a few more moments with Lincoln Riley. Obviously, one of the challenges you're facing is to replace a Heisman-winning quarterback for the second straight year, but Jalen Hurts has arrived from Alabama in the offseason. What's it been like to work with him so far?
He's a neat kid, man. He's a lot of maturity. You know, he's had a unique experience, really, his entire college career. You could write a book on it, you know, and all that he's been through. But he's in a great place. I mean, I think he really has enjoyed being here. I think he's been good for us and this team. I think our approach and both kind of on the field and off the field has been good for him as well. So, yeah, he's done a great job getting to know his teammates, learning our system. Just continues to get better and better. So we're certainly excited to have him and excited that things worked out the way they did.
We're talking Sooner football with Lincoln Riley. You know, before you go, one of the phrases that you use around the program is OU DNA. How would you describe that? And is it something that you can teach, or do guys have to have that when they come in?
That's definitely something that we look to recruit, but then I think we develop it. And I think it's just a mindset and mentality to be the very best. And I think it's trying to develop with these guys in a world that is so focused on the individuals and individuals' accomplishment that, you know, we've tried to really, you know, push the team aspect and push, you know, caring about one another and push, you know, the importance of, you know, this is one of the great programs in history, and part of our responsibility you need to feel is by, you know, continuing that and maintaining and furthering that. So if you do things for others, then all the individual goals that we want you to have, those will take care of themselves, and you got to have the work ethic and the mindset to go do it. And so, yeah, we certainly try to recruit it, but then we do a lot of things to develop it, and, you know, thankful to all the coaches and players that have been here before that have already instilled that in this program, and we're trying just to carry on that legacy.
Lincoln, I got about a minute. Help me with this. I mean, you're entering your third year. You haven't even hit the second anniversary of being named head coach, but talking to you right now especially, it seems like, it feels like you've been there 30 years. I mean, it's a whirlwind, and it seems like it's no big deal at all. How have you managed to make this seem so normal?
Man, Jim, you know, it's having great people around you. You know, I was, you know, getting to come in here and coach under Bob Stoops and learn so much from him, and having the still support of him. You know, Coach Switzer, one of the best ADs in the country, Joe Castiglione. I mean, you got everything you need here to be successful. And we got a tremendous staff that man keeps me from screwing things up. You know, that covers up any weaknesses that we have, and just, you know, that really, really works hard and works well together. So it's just it's a great place with a lot of great history, great people. And so we've got high expectations. So when good things happen in our program, it's expected. It's not a surprise. And we continue to work to try to not be satisfied and continue to further those. So when you do it well at a place like this, then, you know, you know, that's what's fun about it. There's nothing that you can't accomplish.
He is the head football coach at Oklahoma. Oklahoma has won the last two Heisman trophies. They open up their season against Houston on August 31st. Head coach Lincoln Riley. Lincoln, thanks so much. I really appreciate you and the conversation.
Of course, Jim. Thanks again.
Listen, I don't know about you, but I'm constantly chasing. I'm always trying to do better with my time, manage my time. The one thing that I do not have time to do is go to the post office. Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Post Office right to your computer. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail is ready, you simply hand it to your mail carrier and drop it in a mailbox. It is that simple. And with Stamps.com, you can get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. What I'm saying to you is Stamps.com is a no-brainer because it saves you time and money. And right now, I've got a special offer for you. It includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Simply go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone, it's at the top of the homepage, and type in my last name, Rome. I love it. I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com, enter Rome. The New England Patriots are a very successful football team. For reasons still unclear, Bob Kraft is accused of visiting sex workers in a strip mall in Florida and allegedly paying them for sexual acts. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this, but to make matters even worse, apparently the authorities have video of said sex acts. There is existing video. And if that's not horrific enough, the phrase manipulating his genitals has been used to describe what goes down in that video. Other words that have been used to describe what goes down in that video include, quote, explicit, sexual, and graphic, quote, pretty ugly, quote. Again, and just in case you tuned in late, this is Bob Kraft, a guy who's going to celebrate his 78th birthday in a few weeks, going to a strip mall, allegedly, paying a sex worker, allegedly, for a sex act, allegedly, on the day before the AFC Championship game, allegedly, and on the day of the AFC Championship game, allegedly, and being caught on video, allegedly, with his 78-year-old junk being manipulated. So what that video is right now for the rest of us is like the shark from Jaws. You know it's out there. You know it's out there. You're in the water. You can see the fin above the water in the distance. It's getting closer and closer and closer. You're frantically trying to get the hell out of the water. You're swimming as fast as you can. But the shark is swimming faster, closer, 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 closer. You can see it. It's Kraft's junk. It's coming to kill you. It's Jaws, the shark. Like, we all have these nightmares. Haven't you had that nightmare of the worst way to die? Or you've had that conversation. Like, what's the worst imaginable way that you could die? None of us have our choice of how we leave. But what's the worst way to go? You know, somebody pushing you out of an airplane at 30,000 feet. Somebody lighting you on fire. Being eaten by a shark. Seeing a 78-year-old's junk manipulated. And that's the thing. Because the judge, a judge may have bought Kraft, and more importantly, me, some more additional time. But you know, it's only a matter of time before that video surfaces. And countless millions of you dopes are going to watch it, lose your minds, and try to wreck my program and my life. No names mentioned. I'm looking right at you, Trevor Price.
That comes out? I mean, holy hell, man. If that hits the interwebs, good night. Good night.
Trevor, does that mean that if that leaks, you're not going to watch it, or you are?
Oh, I'm in line. I am in line. Tell my wife, move over, let me get a look. That video's going to hit the interwebs. It's going to hit any day now. Like, somebody has a copy of it. Somebody has some of that grainy footage on their cell phone, and they're just sitting around waiting for the right bid. And when that s***s, wow. That's the magic moment we're all waiting for.
Hey, Trevor, you ever ask yourself why Alvin DeLauro has more followers on Twitter than you do? Because it takes like that, brah. I'm just kidding, Trevor. You do have two more Super Bowl rings than Alvin. But Alvin's got like 2,000 more followers than you, Trevor. Dude, why do you not have a verified blue check? You have more followers than a guy who won two Super Bowls. Somebody get Alvin a check. A verified blue check. He won a high school championship, state championship as a point guard, and he's got more followers than a two-time Super Bowl champ who runs companies.
Move over, let me get a look.
We all know this. We all know that Kraft porno is going to drop. It's kind of like how horror movies go. Except in this case, the horror movie is the movie about Bob Kraft. Like, think of the scariest movie you've ever seen. Are you into scary movies? Think of the really scary movies, like The Exorcist, The Shining, Psycho, the Saw franchise, Get Out. Yeah, well, this flick is all of those flicks rolled into one, the Bob Kraft porno. And for a brief horrifying moment yesterday, it appeared that flick was going to drop any second because there was an emergency hearing in the case to discuss that very issue. And according to the Palm Beach Post, Assistant State Attorney Lee Miller filed a motion that argued that unless there is a court order barring the release of that video, prosecutors will release the video. And not only would they release that video, but they were obligated by state law to drop that video. She argued that under Chapter 119, Sunshine Laws, the prosecutors in the case, quote, as the custodian of the records, cannot delay the release of records to allow a person to raise a constitutional challenge to the release of the document, end quote. And quoted, cited Sunshine Law. Man, that's rich as hell. There is nothing sunny about a 77-year-old and his junk hitting the internet and becoming the most viewed porn of all time. Sunshine Law, my ass. That porno hits the internet, and I can all but promise the sun will never rise ever again. I don't know about you, but I didn't even finish reading that report before I started to collect canned food and bottled water, and I headed for my bunker. Because the moment that video does drop, all hell is going to break loose, and it's going to be a very ugly hell. And I, for one, am not going to be here for it. But then something happened. Judge Joseph Marks, ruled that the video could not come out. So we got ourselves an April miracle, a straight legend and a hero in Judge Joe Marks. Yes, a miracle. My man lit that porno on fire. It'll never drop. We'll never see it. It will never see the light of day. We've been spared. Legend. Hero. I know that word gets thrown around a lot, way too lightly. This cat is a legend and a hero. Until I saw that the ruling is temporary. It's only good until April 29th. So my man didn't spare us jack. In fact, he made it worse because he prolonged the inevitable. It makes the whole thing that much more agonizing. It makes the swim to the beach even longer. The shark is there. It's going to eat us alive. We're going to be alive when that shark eats us. Like Kraft. Kraft's attorneys can talk all they want about how releasing the video is going to inflict, quote, irreparable harm to Kraft and his chances for a fair trial. To which I say, I don't give a damn about Kraft. He should have thought of all of that before he turned 77 and went to a seedy strip mall and paid for sex the day before the AFC Championship game and the day of the AFC Championship game. Allegedly, allegedly, allegedly. Man, that's all on him. But he did it, allegedly. And because of all of that, when that tape drops, I can't keep you losers from watching it. And you can't make yourself unsee it. And I can't keep you from trying to wreck what I have built for the past 30 years. After what I did for the past 30 years, I'm looking at 20 years of Bob Kraft porno resets. Get right down to it. 77-year-old Bob Kraft getting down was not the worst thing that ever happened to him. It's the worst thing that ever happened to me. That old man was thinking about himself and old man junk and not the rest of us. And now he's not the one with a shattered life. I am. It's coming. We got a stay of execution, but trust me, it's coming. Tyler Glasnow is my guest. Tyler, good to have you on. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. So you're off to a huge start, as I mentioned. You've got 4 wins. You have allowed only 3 earned runs on the season. You're dominating. The team's in first place in the East. How is life for you right about now?
Good. I mean, it's a long season, so I think it's a good time to kind of step back and just realize, like, you know, I got like 28 plus starts left, so I'm just trying to, as cliche as it sounds, just definitely like take it one day at a time and not get too far ahead of myself and just keep on my routine.
All right, I understand that. Now, in your first 3 starts of the year, you allowed just that 1 earned run. Tuesday, Baltimore gets a few hits off you early on, and then you allowed just 1 hit in your final 4 2/3 innings. You retired 10 straight. How pleased were you with the way you handled that adversity and just kept attacking?
Yeah, good. I mean, not every game you're going to have your best stuff. I threw some pretty good breaking balls in the dirt, and they just weren't swinging at it for whatever reason. But I think days like that where they're seeing it well and just putting the bat on the ball pretty well, it's definitely more important to just lock in and kind of deal with what you have that day and just get into that attack mentality for sure.
Tyler Glasnow joining us. All right, so I hear what you're saying about it being a long year. You've been a huge part to a great start for the team, but the thinking coming in and around baseball was the AL East was going to be a battle between Boston and New York, and here you guys are in first place. You've got a 5.5-game lead. Again, I understand that it's early, but what's the vibe like around that team right now?
I mean, everyone's clicking. I think depending on who you talk to, too. Like, if you were to come and talk to our team in the beginning of the year, I think everyone would say, like, well, I mean, we're going to compete for number one for sure. Like, the confidence in our clubhouse is really high right now. Everyone just kind of playing for one another, and I think that's probably the best formula for a winning team. So, I mean, the overall atmosphere, though, is definitely optimistic, and guys are looking forward to coming to the ballpark every day, and it's just been, like, a lot of fun. The way it's run and just everything about it has been pretty relaxed, and we're all just kind of going out there and just playing for one another.
That's how it's got to be. Tyler Glasnow joining us. Now let's go way back before your days at Hart High School out here in California. In fact, your mother was a college gymnast and a gymnastics coach. Your dad's always getting after it athletically. Your older brother Ted was an all-conference decathlete at Notre Dame. It's a really athletic household. What was life like growing up?
I mean, it was just sports all the time. I mean, me and my brother would, like, compete when we were little all the time. He's 2 years older than I am, so he was always kind of pushing me to be better. And it was, I mean, we were always just in some sort of sport, though, and always doing something. We weren't a very like lazy household. I was never really inside a lot. So yeah, it was just a lot of kind of outdoor activity and just competition.
It's one of those houses, like, I mean, it's a totally different time, but when I was growing up, my old man would be like, man, get your ass out of the house. Go outside, go outside, yeah. Go outside. Like, you can't be in the house, right?
No, I mean, like, so, I, especially as I got older in, like, my teenage years, and I was just, like, I kind of got into video games a little bit, and I was, like, big into, like, PC games, and I always just remember my parents, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you in the house right now playing computer games, and you should be outside doing stuff? So they were always trying to encourage me to just go out and do stuff. And I was always in sports, so it was pretty hard to just sit around and do nothing. But, yeah, I mean, I had my balance of both for sure. But it was mostly just going out and doing stuff.
And then you realize it better just to be outside than have to incur the wrath and listen to get outside. So you play you played at Hart High School, which is a powerhouse program. And as a junior, you were throwing in the mid-80s. And then some colleges start to pay some attention to you. But a lot of them were saying, let's just see what happens. Then you're a senior, and the University of Portland comes around, and they're serious. So what was that time like?
So, yeah, that was actually, like, my junior year. I was throwing, like, mid-80s. You know, there was a couple teams that came and scouted me and were like, hey, let's wait and see how you do your senior year. But University of Portland gave me an offer my junior year, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to sign. Like, I'm not going to – I don't want the pressure of, like, having to do well my senior year. Like, I'm just going to go D1, whatever. Like, that's cool. I'm going to sign to Portland and just have fun my senior year. And then I got, like, a pretty big velo jump, and then a lot of teams were like, what happened? And I already signed my letter and everything, so – I wasn't going to back out of that, so that was probably like the biggest reason that I went pro. But they had a good program, like really good coaches and stuff, but I just think I kind of progressed a bit, and I wanted to go get that like pro ball coaching.
Well, that's what happened your senior year, right? You grow into your body, you get a little more, and you get that velo jump, then you start to get attention from bigger programs, and then all of a sudden you're drafted by the Pirates in the fifth round. What was that experience like?
Well, yeah, it was insane, man. I heard like rounds 2 to 5, and I was actually, weirdly enough, sleeping during the draft. It was like 11, and I really didn't think too much about it. I was like, I'm not going to worry about it. If it happens, it happens. And then my mom like ran into my room and woke me up, and was like, oh my God, like first round, and she was like freaking out, and it was cool. I called some of my friends, and it was just it was a really nice experience. I can still recall pretty vividly, so. It was great.
It's a great story. Tyler Glass now joining us. You know, it's always interesting when you move up to the next level, right? But if you break it down even further, what were you like as a pitcher when you were drafted? For example, at that point, how much weightlifting had you done? How much had you really thought about the details of your mechanics?
I'd say, like, I got pretty serious about it maybe, like, around senior year of high school. I think, like, once the draft and everything was – that's really, like, sparked a fire under me. And I've always had like a really good work ethic, especially since pro ball. And I think the biggest thing I needed to learn was how to work smart, not work hard. I was always like doing something maybe probably a little too extra. And I started to realize that there's definitely like a formula. There's a nice little balance there. So I think as I got older, that became easier to understand. But as far as what I was like when I first came in, I was just, I mean, super gangly, goofy dude that just tried to throw really hard, which, I mean, not much has changed, but it's a little bit different. I put a little more muscle on and have obviously more of an idea of what I'm doing now. But, yeah, I look back at those times, and it was definitely some good times, and I've learned a lot from there, so from that time anyway. So it's kind of cool to look back on.
Dude, I don't know about that part about super gangly and super goofy. I've seen that backflip. All right, a backflip, a standing backflip for anybody is hard enough, but I'd argue for somebody who's listed at 6'8", it should be near impossible. What's the backstory on the backflip? Have you always done that, or is that something you picked up later in life?
So I had a trampoline growing up, and I had like a pretty crazy group of friends that would like come over, and I learned how to do like backflips and stuff on the trampoline. And then one day I went to, I think it was in like 15 or 16 or something. I was in Mexico in the off season, and I was with a bunch of my family and friends, and I was like maybe one or two beers deep, and then I was like, oh, I could probably backflip. And we were in like the ocean, like halfway up, like on my knees, and I tried it and I landed it, and I was like, well, if I can do it in the water, I can probably do it on the sand. And then I did it there, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I know how to do a backflip. So,
dude, how good did that feel? Well, or do you not remember? What was it like when you nailed that thing for the first time?
Hammered or anything. No, it felt good. I mean, it was cool. Like, it's not very practical. Like, it's not like a big life skill, but it's definitely, it was cool to pull off.
Dude, who was more proud, your mom or your dad? Your mom, the gymnastics coach, or your dad?
I don't think either of them. I think they were like, how about you stop backflipping? So I was like, all right, probably a good idea.
I see you working. Also, you've been known to play a little online chess. When did that start? How good of a chess player are you?
It started, my mom put me in chess club when I was in elementary school. Like, I think I started in like first or second grade, and I just like found a love for it really, really fast. And I got away from it, obviously, like after elementary school, I didn't play at all. And then I picked it back up. I think it was in 16 when we went to Cincinnati, they had like a chess board in the clubhouse, and my brother plays chess too. And I just played a game and it kind of like re-sparked the love for it. So it's really just kind of like, I'm not a video game guy. Like I can't like sit there and play video games for a long time. So chess is kind of like my escape, like in between like shag and stuff like that. And then like when I go home, it's like I kind of just in the morning to just kind of lock in a little bit. But I'm decent. I guess it depends on who you're comparing me to. But like when I lived in New York, I would go to West 4th and like play those guys in the park, and they're a lot better than me. So like on that scale, I'm not that good. But for, I think in terms of like society, maybe I'm like pretty decent.
Dude, what are those guys like in the park? Are they talking junk? Are they totally cerebral? Does nobody say anything? What are those games like?
It's honestly like, it's such a different, there's so many different personalities. Like, it's almost like a baseball clubhouse. Like, there's a lot of them are like homeless and just geniuses, and they just like, you have no chance. But some of them are just out there like, and they're all really good. And a lot of them will just like talk smack and like get you to, cause you have to pay for the games basically. Like, it's like $5 a game or whatever you agree to before, and then they usually always beat you. But I've beaten a few of them a few times. None of like the savants or anything, but it's just cool. It's like a competition atmosphere, and it's a good way to blow off time. It's also a good way to lose $25 to $30 pretty fast. So
I was going to say, what are the biggest stakes you've played for? And is there like pickup chess? Are there local runs? Is New York chess different than California chess? I mean, shoot, why are we talking baseball? Really, this is way better.
I've only really played New York, and that's just always just, there's like Central Park, you can go play, there's always people there, and then West 4th is like my favorite spot. I lived like close to there in the off season, so I would just walk over. But it was, for me, it was like mostly not about like winning money, obviously. It was just more so of like learning, and those guys are so good that you can learn. And a lot of them too, like they'll be like, all right, give me $5 extra and I'll give you like a little lesson. It's definitely a hustle. Like, that's all they do for money and stuff. So, I mean, it was definitely a good deal. I think you can learn a good amount going and playing against those guys.
Oh, you know it's a hustle. Dude, do these guys know who you are? They're like, oh, yeah, here comes that best pitcher in the American League right now.
Nah, dude, not at all. This is more so like last year, too. And then I feel like when we go to New York, like not many people know with Rays players and whatnot. But, yeah, I just kind of – if they ask what I do, I'll tell them. But most of the time, I just kind of – I'm just there.
Can we stop talking about this? You're going to blow my cover. Last thought, like your mom, did your mom put you into that because she thought that would be a good use of your time? Or was she already working like the mental aspects of you being an athlete? Like, why did your mom put you into chess in first grade?
Probably just to keep me occupied from doing. It was after school, and it was just my brother was into it too. And I kind of just did whatever my brother did. And I don't know. I haven't really talked to her about it. I wonder why she put me in. I don't know like the core reasons behind it, but I would have to say probably just to like, she put me in everything. Like, I did every sport imaginable. Like, I did a bunch of extracurricular stuff, and she was always like she was just a big fan of me, like, I don't know, occupying my time in like a good way, as opposed to just kind of doing nothing. So I'm really glad she put me in chess, though. It definitely sparked a love for it.
She sounds awesome. Who's more fierce, moms or pops?
Oh, pops for sure. Well, okay, that's not true. Like, my dad is probably the silliest, goofiest, happiest person alive. Like, but he, I mean, when it was growing up, obviously, like, he was the enforcer. Like, he's a dude that you're terrified of. And he, I mean, they both were good, though. They're both, like, really strict, and they wanted the best out of us. And I've always had a really good relationship with my parents. And, I mean, yeah, they did a good job with me and my brother. So I'm very thankful for having a good family.
Last thought. I'm trying to let you go, but that's really interesting because I've got two kids now. One's about to go to college and one's 14. And my wife and I talk about this a lot. And early on when I would bad cop the kids, because that's your job as dad, my wife would say to me, you know, they're going to resent you. I'm like, no, they're going to respect me. So when your dad was tough, and by the way, I was always afraid of my dad too, and I'm better for it now. He never did anything to me, but he didn't have to. Did you resent it or did you always respect it when Pops was tough?
Oh, no. I mean, I loved it. He was never like, he was just, it was more so just like, he was just scary in his words, I guess. You just don't want to like disappoint like that. But yeah, he was, I mean, I always, especially looking back at it, like, I'm so thankful for it. Like, I'm really glad some of the stuff I did, obviously, like, if they were just like, well, whatever, like, not a big deal. Like, I don't think that would have been the best idea. But I respect my parents more than probably anyone in the world. So looking back on it, they did a lot of things that I'm.
I want to talk to you for a minute about my favorite new company. Literally, Johnny O. My favorite new company for a number of reasons. Number one, the tweener button. The tweener button is genius. My man Johnny O invented and patented the tweener button. What that is a hidden button between the second and third button, and it's featured on all Johnny O shirts. The tweener button is the first patented button to make sure that you're not too buttoned up and not too unbuttoned. And it solves the age-old second button dilemma. Should you button one or should you button two? I'm telling you, it ensures that you always look just right. It is a total game changer. Second reason I love the company, I met my man Johnny O. Johnny O and I sat together yesterday and we talked business. John is tremendous. I get his company, I get his vision, and I love his product. Clones, use the promo code ROME for 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com at checkout through May 30th. That's 20% off the regular price button-ups, which do come in a range of fabrics, patterns, and styles. Plus, shipping is free for orders over $85. Write this down. Get this down. Johnny-O.com, promo code ROME, and get 20% off your first order and free shipping on orders over $85. I can't stress this enough. The product is amazing. Looks incredible. I wear it myself all the time. Johnny-O.com for your tweener shirt at 20% off. Johnny-O.com. Gronk retired from football back on March 24th, but that does not mean that he is retired from being Gronk. And I hope that never happens, because the latest chapter that the big lug and lovable meathead wrote in the big book of bro is one of his best. And that's saying something about this guy. Everybody knows that the Pats won their sixth title earlier this year. And unlike in the NHL, where there's only one Stanley Cup, the NFL will chisel out a new Lombardi every season. So, when the Pats pine-boxed the Rams, Roger Goodell handed over a brand new piece of hardware to the franchise. Fast forward from the trophy presentation on February 3rd to the Red Sox home opener last Tuesday, April 9th. Red Sox went all neighborly with it. They invited the Super Bowl champs to their yard to take a victory lap, to throw out the first pitch, and to show off the six different silver sticks that they have stacked since 2001. You would think that Boston, as a city, would be pretty bored of constantly honoring championship teams every single week, but they're not, because winning never gets old. So the plan for last Tuesday was to have the Pats walk out onto the field at Fenway, hold up the mantelpieces, and watch Julian Edelman throw out the first pitch. And it went off exactly like that. But the real story here happened in the staging tent, out in left field, where the team was waiting to be introduced. Various news outlets report that while waiting undercover, in the shadow of the monster, Edelman asked if he could throw a few heaters to warm up the cannon, which he did. And then at some point, he asked somebody to stand in, like a batter, so he could get his accuracy down. And who do you think volunteered for that job? None other than Gronk, of course. And do you think Gronk just stood in the imaginary box with an imaginary bat? Of course not. Hell no. Dude was not about to start waggling around some lumber that wasn't exactly there. He needed a stick. So he did exactly what you think Gronk would do. He grabbed the new Lombardi and he dug in. So I'm going to roll tape on what happened next. The tape comes from the Patriots official Twitter handle. And the three voices that you'll hear documenting what happened are Matthew Slater, Jason McCourty, and Daron Harmon. Check this out.
As he's lined up, Jules is the pitcher, Gronk standing there, and I think we're all under the impression, I mean, no way is he going to swing a Lombardi trophy.
A little strange. We're thinking he's not going to swing the bat. He's not going to do it. And literally at the last second, when 11 throws the ball, we see 87 go from a batting position to a bunt.
Probably not ideal.
Oh,
Gronkowski's parting gift.
Sometimes things happen.
If anybody could do it and get away with it, it'd be Mr. Gronkowski himself. He has now left an everlasting mark so that people will never forget that he was a part of that championship team.
The trophy is special, not damaged. Now it has become vintage, is what I'll say.
This dude, I'm telling you, man, the big fella, and we've always known this about this guy, he is athletic. He is really athletic. If you see that videotape, you see the way he squares around and gets that bunt down? That's the epitome of do your job, do your job. I watch a lot of high school baseball, and I watch a lot of travel ball. It's constantly like, do your job, get that bunt down. Gronk did his job. 11 deals, 87 squares perfectly. Freaking Gronk. Textbook. The way he squared up that bunt with the Lombardi. And the textbook left a Rawlings-sized crater on the football. It's now part of the trophy. Literally, Deflategate, part two. The guy celebrated, too, like he just jacked one over the monster into somebody's windshield to win game seven. Because Gronk. Because Gronk doesn't give a damn. That is such an awesome piece of video. Such an awesome chapter. Scotty Smalls grabbing his a-hole stepdad's Babe Ruth signed baseball in the sandlot thinks that's messed up. The only thing missing from that entire sequence was Gronk breaking the Lombardi over his knee a la Bo Jackson and spiking the broken pieces, which I'm sure he would have done if he was not so pleased with the way he got down that suicide squeeze. Perfectly. And textbook. I mean, take the most valuable thing you own and then imagine yourself using it as sports equipment, because that's exactly what Gronk just did. The most valuable thing that anybody's ever had, and squared it up. Well, put it down. Squared around and put it down. And he loved it. And afterwards, according to reports, he yelled, quote, "Take it out of my paycheck. Take it out of my paycheck." Most Gronk line ever, if it's true. You know how utterly bored with winning you have to be to square up, to bunt with the Lombardi? If this were Cleveland, as an example, they'd have that thing behind bulletproof glass, buried 6 feet under, with armed guards around it 24/7. But in New England, the Lombardi is just another Louisville in the bat rack. Remember, the same city that broke the commissioner's trophy when a fan threw an unopened beer at the Red Sox parade. I mean, Boston seriously is at the point where they are winning so much and they're so bored with it, they're destroying their own championship hardware because they've got too much of it and they don't know where to put it all. Now, if I'm the Red Sox, the first thing I would do, having watched Gronk's act, I'd see if I can get this guy to come out of retirement and play baseball. That bunt was that good. That bunt was perfect. And no team needs to start getting guys on base and moved over more than the defending champs. As far as a former Patriot attempting a career in baseball, and why not? I saw more from Gronk in laying down that bunt than I've ever seen from Tim Tebow on a diamond. Make this guy an offer. And do it before he dents up any more of the remaining five trophies. I would tell Gronk to never change, but what a waste of time that'd be, because he's never going to, and he never should. And that was awesome. Baseball bat, get this guy a Lombardi trophy.
Baseball bat, get this guy a tennis racket.
Where you at, Bron? You know where I am. Where are you at? You know where I am. I'm waiting. I'm not going to read for that either.
God, no!